Moncrief on News Talk.
I felt like I could just give this beautiful, incredible gift to kids.
Pee-wee's Playhouse, Pee-wee speaking. Who's this?
Hi, Pee-wee!
Hi, kids. Guess what?
What?
I'm having a party, and you're invited!
Yeah!
They could just jump into the TV and jump into a world that was, like, really full of beauty and fun.
Hi, Elvis.
Hi, Cher.
We've got a new member.
I think it was almost like I thought I was inside of a cartoon or something. I don't know why they thought I was an eccentric or would fit in at all. You know, a little tiny Paul Giamatti.
That is a little piece of Pee-wee as himself, which is streaming now on Sky Documentaries and Now TV. And James joins us to tell us more about this. What's going on here, James?
So, yeah, I mean, this is a documentary about Paul Rubens, who's better known for creating and completely and utterly embodying the role of Pee-wee Herman. And the thing about, like, Pee-wee Herman is, you know, I'm of a generation that if I were American, I would have grown up watching, you know, Pee-wee's Playhouse and the Pee-wee movies. But I don't quite know why he never quite managed to break onto the TV screens. For my living memory as the one who spent my entire childhood and much of my adolescence watching TV. So I always knew who the character was, and I had seen clips, of course, of it. And when Paul Rubens passed away after a 6-year battle with cancer in 2023, I saw that that happened, and I was completely aware of who Pee-wee Herman is. But so many of these, podcasters that I would listen to in the US had such outpourings of grief at his loss that I was kind of taken aback by it and really so surprised by how important he had been in so many people's lives as a TV star.
Right. Was he a bit Marmite-y, dare I ask? Would there be a whole slew of people who didn't get the charm of the Pee-wee Herman series at all?
I would say yes, because it was very kind of esoteric and very much built in an American style of comedy based on kind of improv, right? So Rubens himself was an artist. He grew up in New York and Florida, and then he ended up in Caltech studying art and produced as a teen and young man these very avant-garde, you know, Andy Warhol-esque pieces of performance art. And then when he was trying to job as an actor, he ended up working with the Groundlings, which would be a very well-known American improv group. And I think that's kind of like a fundamental difference between comedy of the Anglosphere, right? In the UK, they kind of have panel shows. In Ireland, we have stand-ups who basically just are raconteurs. And in the US, they have improv. And that is their absolute comedy kind of like be-all and end-all. And he started off in the Groundlings, and because of that kind of nature of comedy, I don't think everyone here on this side of the Atlantic really gets it. But he was failing to make it as an actor, and when he failed to get a job on SNL, he realized that Pee-wee Herman was the one character that people, you know, were bought into the most, and therefore he put his whole career into that. Now, what's really fascinating about this as a documentary is it explores very candidly his career, his history, and then the two different arrests he endured. So one was in 1992 when he was arrested for indecent exposure in an adult film theater, and another time in 2002 when he was very, very falsely accused of being in possession of child pornography, even though absolutely he was not. And these are seen as sort of kind of thinly veiled homophobic attacks on him because he was a gay man, even though he led this incredibly private life. And he knew as soon as he started working in children's TV that to preserve his career, he needed to make his private life absolutely and utterly private. And what you see in a documentary here is a man, you know, coming towards the end of his life, having handed over the reins to tell his life story to a different person, the director of this filmmaker named Matt Wolff. And you see these talking head interviews that Rubens completed with him. There were about 40 hours of footage before Rubens ultimately cut ties with the project and completely walked away before sending one final voice note to Matt Wolff the day before he passed away. And you see these interviews where he is very combative, grumpy, at times very charming and very funny, but completely and utterly wanting to be in control of the narrative of how his story is told utterly. And that's perhaps what elevates this documentary beyond just simply a kind of hagiographic look at Pee Wee Herman, because, you know, that definitely is what it is. But it's this kind of seeing between the lines of who Rubens is as a character that makes it really, really fascinating. It's funny, it's heartfelt, it's very, very sad in places, but it's thrilling as well.
Was it a very kind of crazy life that he led? Because I was reading different things, but I don't know whether it was a wedding or a mock wedding in which Imelda Marcos was officiating at it.
Well, that one didn't feature in the documentary.
Imagine not wanting that in part of your history. But the people that are in it, there's this Lynn Marie Stewart. She was his co-star, wasn't she? And there was a kind of sense of, were they married, were they not married?
Yeah, so he, because he was so rigidly in control of his personal life and so afraid that, you know, the reality of his being gay would come out and leak in the public and therefore, you know, ruin everything that he had built, he definitely surrounded himself with people that he felt he could trust. But then there's also a lot of talk in the documentary about how if you got on his wrong side and a feud started between you, you might never speak again. So he's very, you know, one of his longtime collaborators was Phil Hartman, who was a SNL actor. He's probably best known here for voicing Troy McClure in The Simpsons, who came to a very untimely end himself in the 90s. And, you know, he helped sort of, he was in the Groundlings along with Rubens, and he sort of always maintained that he helped form the character of Pee Wee Herman, helped to design some of the, you know, the props that are used to come up with characters that were used in the whole thing, and that he never made a penny out of it, and they never spoke again after they had this huge falling out. So what you get is a sense here of, like, it's kind of like watching a tortured musician, except it's not a musician, it's a child performer. And the whole madcap antics of it is very tongue-in-cheek. Definitely there are nods to adult humor throughout the whole thing. Like, the clips we see of the Pee Wee Herman show definitely present a Marmite type of thing, but I could imagine if you were a child in the late 80s watching this transfixed, because it would just be so weird and funny and odd that you know, and you had nothing else to look at.
Yes.
So you had a very captive audience, and, you know, it really helped me gain a huge appreciation of Rubens as a comedic force, as an auteur of his own kind of character. But then also, how is it that when you play, you know, when you so embody a character so much so that the person who gets the star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame is Pee Wee Herman and not Paul Rubens, how does that make you feel about yourself when the entire, you know, country is in love with this person you've created and
and
is very happy to make you the butt of every joke when your personality comes to the forefront?
God, what an interesting headspace that would be to live your life in, my God. So Pee Wee as himself, streaming now on Sky Documentaries and Now TV. It sounds absolutely fascinating. This is a clip now from Rematch, which is streaming on Disney Plus as we speak.
You didn't know you had a child.
I did.
Kasparov seems different, don't you think? Almost invincible.
You don't get it, do you?
His daughter makes him happy, which proves he's human. It proves he's vulnerable, just like the rest of us.
So that is a little bit of Rematch, streaming on all episodes on Disney Plus. It's from the world of chess, isn't it, James?
Yeah, now look, it's a bit of a hard sell to go something co-produced by the European Union and made for French and Hungarian TV. It's a must sit down and watch, but before anyone gets entirely put off, it is completely in the English language. So this is a dramatic retelling of a chess tournament, I guess, between the then chess grandmaster Garry Kasparov and IBM's Deep Blue artificial intelligence, which happened first in 1996 it happened a couple of times, but there was a major one in 96 when IBM thought they would beat him and Kasparov won, and then a year later they agreed to a rematch. And it explores really everything to do with that, from IBM's, you know, stock price plummeting, you know, as soon as Kasparov beats them once or twice, to him and his life in, you know, the USSR, growing up as a chess grandmaster, and his various bouts against other grandmasters who were more beloved by the regime in the USSR at the time, and therefore always had a leg up, including surveillance of his room and, you know, interactions with his team and so on. So it is an unusual thing. It comes from a creator named Jan Englund. He's a Quebecois Canadian filmmaker, best known for getting an Oscar nomination for a short film that, to be honest, I'd never heard of, named Henry. And it stars, two of our parish, Sarah Bulger, who people will know from In America and The Mayans, amongst other things, and Aidan Quinn. Sarah Bulger plays kind of the IBM villain of the piece, and Aidan Quinn plays Kasparov's agent, Roger Laver. But perhaps the breakout of it is Christian Cook. He's a British actor. He's best known to me for Cemetery Junction, which was a Ricky Gervais movie maybe 12 to 15 years ago.
Okay.
And haven't seen him in much since. But here he plays a very, a very rigid, at times explosive chess player in the form of Kasparov. Now, I will say it suffers a little bit with comparisons to perhaps the more, much more fated chess drama of recent times, the Queen's Gambit. And here you have, you know, some funny kind of stuff going on where they're ramping up the tension by showing Kasparov looking at the chessboard very pensively, and then they flash to a back room where a computer server with a few flashing LED lights is supposed to be the great enemy that he's playing. And I don't think that quite all manages to pull it off. But I will say, when it is good, I found it very, very thrilling and exciting. I thought, like, it explored the kind of mental acuity and the absolute iron-willed mentality you need to have to be playing chess at the ultimate level, including against a machine with the entire chess community worldwide looking on, hoping that Kasparov will win because they didn't want him to be beaten by an AI technology. And how, you know, in 2025, when AI technology is embedded almost overnight into every facet of our life, how this was the ultimate battle that mankind lost.
I'm sure there are loads of very cruel comparisons between 1996 AI and today's current crop. I'm sure that today's current crop would laugh in the face of 1996 AI. Have a go at it now, it would say, Gary, if you think you're hard enough. Sounds great. That is on Disney Plus. We look forward to it. And this sounds very interesting. You're going to be doing a lot of explaining now in a moment, James. This is a clip from Murderbot.
I had devoted every spare second on this planet trying to hack my governor module. And now was the moment of truth. I just isolated an admin password, and I was going to try to use it to crack the final core encryption. Okay. Patching the code. Holy sh... It worked! It worked! Okay. What do I do now? Maybe kill all these idiots.
Yeah, that is a little clip from Murderbot. New episodes every Friday on Apple TV Plus. Off you go, James. What is a Murderbot? What is this world? Where is it coming from?
All right, so the creator of Murderbot is Martha Wells, and it is part of the Murderbot Diaries series of novels and novellas. And I will say, to those who are sci-fi fans of all sorts, she won both the Hugo and the Nebula, which would be like the Booker Prize.
Right.
And, the Booker Prize of sci-fi for a novel in this series. And it's adapted by Paul and Chris Weitz, who are best known for About a Boy, their big breakout hit in the early 2000s, but haven't quite managed to capture the same kind of critical attention ever since. Their most recent big hit, hit in inverted commas, is Mozart in the Jungle, which was on Amazon Prime for a couple of seasons. Now, who we heard in the clip there was Alexander Skarsgård as the titular murder bot. It's set in the future, in a very kind of expected mankind has dominated the universe, and there's, you know, debates about mining and steel and resources on far-flung planets with funny names. And he plays this security android type thing who hacks his own system because he's so sick of mankind. And he basically spends his days watching a show within a show, which is called The Rise and Fall of Sanctuary Moon. It's kind of like a Star Trek style zipping adventure through outer space. space. And he gets hired by a team of kind of goody two shoes hippie scientists, led most notably by Noma Dumezweni, who's a British actress who's now, she's reached her kind of I'm in everything period.
Right.
She was most recently seen in The Watcher on Netflix. And they are landed on this new planet that has hostile alien species and mysteries to unravel. And Alexander Skarsgård is their security android who stands in the corner.
Sorry, that's what a murder bot is it? It's a security android.
Yes, well, it's the name he gives himself. And after he hacks the system and he goes rogue. Now, he sort of doesn't go rogue in the Terminator style where he's trying to kill everyone. He's just sort of looking on at the human beings he's protecting with increasing disdain of everything. Now, the character is kind of coded, and the creators of the show will agree to this, as perhaps being, you know, displaying traits that we would associate with people with autism or people on the or people who are agender or asexual. So you're not going to see any bodice ripping kind of stuff going on here at all with this robot.
All right.
Instead, he's incredibly observant of everything going on around him and slowly learning to both love and loathe the people he's working with. Now, I will say, for me, it's a bit of a mixed bag. It looks like an episode of Doctor Who, and that's not what you expect on Apple TV with the budget that they usually have.
No, for its lack of budget, Doctor Who.
If you're sick of kind of sci-fi shows that are shot with like blue-green scale and look that, you know, that are all absolutely miserable, then this might be your cup of tea, because it's very, it's supposed to be charming and funny. But for me, ultimately, the biggest problem was the jokes didn't quite land thick or fast enough. And when they came, they were often weak. And then I was a long way to the next one. So all in, three episodes in, I'm not 100% convinced of where this is going or if it'll grow legs. But there is a whole series of novels to adapt and novellas. So the material is there. I'm just not sure if the audience is.
Right. So it might get good as long as you have several years to put aside to wait.
Agreed.
Right. Excellent. Good plan, Apple. Alexander Skarsgård as well. I love him.
Well, he's got, like, so obviously he's from the, you know, from the Skarsgård dynasty, most notably led by his father, who was absolutely fantastic in Andor, which I cannot recommend highly enough. But he kind of is a funny guy because he is ostensibly like a leading man, right? He's tall, he's handsome, he's buff. And yet he clearly desires to do comedy because his sort of breakout role was actually a real minor role in Zoolander way back when. That sort of really put him on the map in Hollywood. And ever since then, he's been doing kind of a lot of serious things, but always leaning and gravitating towards kind of more comedic parts. And here he's playing it very straight. You know, he's the straight man amongst the more kind of wild characters. And he definitely manages to pull that off well.
Right. Well, he's in the right place with Apple. You know, we're obviously taking the long game view on this, so it'll suit his long game view also. Good luck with that, we say to both of them. James, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.